The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Before we jump in today, I want to stop and recognize that this is a very special episode. It is number 100. I want to take this as an opportunity to thank all you and our incredible guests for being so gracious with their knowledge and their time. I'm happy to say we're now on 57 platforms and our audience is now from 102 countries. If you want to help us to continue promoting this message of wellness and helping us continue to grow, please leave a review, whether on Apple Podcasts or a platform of your choice, and please share with your friends so that we can continue to spread and grow the message of wellness. Welcome to the Whole Healthcare Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Heart disease remains a leading cause of death in this country, and I'm thrilled and honored to have as our guest today, Dr. Lauren Sperling, who's an international thought leader on heart disease prevention. Dr. Sperling is the current executive director of the Million Hearts Initiative for the Division of Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. He's the founder and was the director of the Heart Disease Prevention Center at Emory since 1997. He's currently the Katz Professor in Preventive Cardiology at the Emory University School of Medicine and Professor of Global Health in the Rollins School of Public Health. He served as the president of the American Society for Preventive Cardiology from 2014 to 2016, served on the writing committee of 2018 of the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association guideline on the management on blood cholesterol, and served as chair of the World Heart Federation writing group on the roadmap for cardiovascular disease prevention among people living with diabetes. Dr. Sperling was the recipient of the 2017 Award of Honor from the Alumni Association of Emory University School of Medicine. He has received awards for excellence in teaching, mentorship, and the R. Wayne Alexander Research Mentor Award. He has authored over 350 manuscripts, abstracts, and books, and has been invited as speaker on every continent except Antarctica, which sounds like a bucket list item. Dr. Sperling, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the kind introduction, Dr. Berquist, and it is really, really wonderful to be here with you and your audience today to share the message related to cardiovascular prevention. And I'm titling the podcast today, The Heart of Cardiovascular Prevention, because really I have dedicated my professional career to this important cause, And I'm so glad to share my thoughts and my recommendations with the audience. I do want to qualify that I'm here speaking to you on my personal behalf. And although I do serve many wonderful organizations, as you had outlined in my introduction, that my comments today are my comments and not those of the organizations that I serve, work for, or work with.
Yes. And thank you. And, you know, Larry, I want to start by really going back to what you said, that you've dedicated your professional life to preventive cardiology. You know, we've worked in the same institution for a couple decades now, but you started the heart disease prevention program over 20 years ago. What motivated you back then to start it? Because you really are a pioneer in this area.
Yeah, thank you. And so when I began to have an interest in this area, that interest quickly developed into a commitment and a passion and a cause. And really initially on a personal level, my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, had heart disease at a young age in his mid-40s and unfortunately died at too young of an age. And so I realized as a teenager, the impact of heart disease on families and the loss of important individuals at too early of a time in their life. And I am very fortunate that my career has spanned the world of molecular medicine, vascular medicine, all the way to population and global health. And really, when I was in the middle of my fellowship in cardiology at Emory, it was an NIH-sponsored fellowship in molecular and vascular medicine, I started really recognizing that we had a much, much better understanding of the, what the medical term would be, pathobiology, the causes of the major causes of heart disease, atherosclerosis. And we already knew many of the risk factors, but I quickly began to recognize that the future of what I was going to do and how I would be able to serve best those that I want to serve, and that would be my patients and my community and others, would be through heart disease prevention, a focus on heart disease prevention. And in fact, when I was in my training, we had no fellowship pathway in cardiovascular prevention. And so I designed my own fellowship training pathway. And we, in 1997, launched one of the very first programs in the United States related to heart disease prevention. And we have developed that program now over several decades. Our mission's focusing on patient-centered and family-centered care, establishing and developing a world-class academic pursuit and research, and then an educational component of what we do. We started one of the first preventive cardiology fellowships in the country, now in place for over a decade. And thanks to this support from the CATS Foundation for helping us train the future leaders of cardiovascular prevention. And at Emory, we've had over these decades very unique programs, because I know you focus on lifestyle medicine, and we'll talk some about, you know, my concept of lifestyle medicine, because I think it's really, really important. But at Emory, we started unique programs, the HeartWise program, the Optimal Living program, a program called Staying Aloft, which was for all of the Delta pilots of the country trying to identify their cardiovascular risk and prevent them from having cardiovascular events. And so it's really been an exciting journey for me. Never when I started this journey did I ever have a plan, first of all, to end up where I was today. And so I do feel really fortunate to serve our country in a leadership position. And having had the opportunities to serve on a global level, I've actually learned a lot from so many others. But I've learned that our work is not done. We have a lot of work to do related to preventing heart disease. And so I'm glad your audience will realize today that this work is work that we need to do together.
Yeah, absolutely. And Larry, as you mentioned, you know, over 20 years you have, you know, created so many innovative programs, grown a training program for the next generation of cardiologists to be well-versed in understanding preventive cardiology. Yet still, overwhelmingly, the field of cardiology is focused on treating cardiovascular disease rather than preventing it. And as you mentioned, there's still so much work that needs to be done. And it brings to mind, you know, right now, everyone is thinking about COVID-19. And, you know, it's really exposed so much of, risk and susceptibility of people having underlying diseases, specifically cardiovascular disease. What do you think will be the future or our new normal within this space of cardiology as it keeps kind of evolving and hopefully focusing more on prevention? Like, how has COVID-19 influenced this, you know, trajectory over decades? And what do you anticipate with that?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question in the here and now, and it will be a very important question, critically important moving forward, because you mentioned the new normal, and I think new is correct. I'm not sure anything going forward will be normal. It will be different. What this viral illness has done has made us recognize that we're very vulnerable, humankind. And we're especially vulnerable when we are at risk. And risk, what we see with COVID-19, is a spectrum of age and chronic diseases. And these vulnerabilities are playing out right now before our eyes and in individuals and communities that are vulnerable. And what, as far as the future of cardiovascular prevention, an article that I wrote in one of our top heart journals called Circulation, it was an On My Mind commentary, was just e-published a week or two ago and will be published in the coming weeks. And it was titled The Future of Cardiovascular Prevention, Unprecedented Times. It does mean that today we should recognize that unfortunately the majority of adult Americans are unhealthy and unwell. The majority of adult Americans have at least one or multiple heart disease risk factors. And we see these risk factors even in our children and teenagers. And so that should be concerning to us because the future of cardiovascular diseases are one of concern, which brings us back to the need for greater focus on cardiovascular prevention. But here we know from data that only 3% of adult Americans have ideal cardiovascular health. This is from the American Heart Association's model called My Life Simple 7. So each and every one of you can get online right now, look up AHA Life Simple 7, and it may take you more than 7 seconds, but in a very short period of time, you'll be able to get a sense of how healthy you are, not how diseased you are. And that's a difference. And so, but the majority of adults in this country are unwell, and there are no secret ingredients. Actually, the science is known, the care plans are known, and we have really what we need today to prevent a significant portion of those suffering from heart disease in our country.
Yeah, and you know, this association that we've seen with COVID-19, where people who have underlying conditions, including cardiovascular conditions, have been more at risk for severe illness, hospitalizations, and complications, has really increased awareness, you know, around this need to be healthier, as you mentioned. You know, a lot of the questions I've gotten from my patients are how to build their immune system to help fight the virus and protect themselves. And you just put it so well that probably one of the biggest things we can do isn't, you know, taking extra vitamin C, even though, you know, that may potentially be helpful, but it's kind of more of a lifetime dedication to preventing the conditions that increase our susceptibility. Do you think that is something that, you know, we can do more about? And if so, what are ways that we can be kind of more prepared and stronger as a nation when it comes to these invisible enemies like COVID-19?
Yeah, you mentioned the term susceptibility. And here we can think of susceptibility on an individual level or a family level, a community level, a larger population level, or even a global level. And the concept of our immune system is really important. It's designed to thwart these kind of enemies, like a invisible viral illness. But when my patients ask me about, you know, are there supplements and herbals and whatnot that can help my immune system, I say we really have some great tools to help our immune system. We know that exercise is 10,000 times more potent of an antioxidant when you do this in a regular, moderate fashion. And really approaching healthy dietary patterns. The Latin derivation for the word diet comes from dieta. And dieta means a way of life. It doesn't mean, oh, I can't eat that this week, I'm on a diet. So I think as an individual, we should right now realize that we have the ability to be healthier and more health focused today. But there are many individuals that have challenges related to their health. And these challenges are at levels that have to do with access to healthcare or unequal access to healthcare. And both you and I, Sharon, are physicians. We're clinicians and we take care of patients. I think we need to be very humbled that when we really want to talk about health, health and healthcare are two very different things. And really only about 20% of our health and our risk for disease and determinants of health and disease are really contributed by traditional healthcare. And so we absolutely need integrated approaches to healthcare, to community health, but also to public health and population health. And I think these are some of the lessons that, that we need to open our eyes to right now related to the COVID pandemic. And you know, when we talk about pandemics, really cardiovascular disease and what we call cardiometabolic diseases related to diabetes and obesity, these are epidemics. In fact, these are the greatest epidemics on our planet right now. And related to COVID-19, we know that there are serious conditions that are chronic conditions that put individuals at greater risk for more serious COVID-related disease manifestations. They don't necessarily put these individuals at greater risk of developing COVID, the virus. But we know that heart conditions, serious heart conditions, obesity and diabetes are among three conditions that are putting many individuals developing this virus at greater risk for more serious illness and death.
And Larry, you bring up another really good point about, you know, lessons learned in the current time with COVID-19, because one of the other areas that we're learning is that disparities related to socioeconomic determinants have come to play a role. And socioeconomic status is known to have a significant effect on cardiovascular health. Can you explain a little bit more how that plays out?
Yeah, certainly. So health is related to many different factors. And many of these factors have to do with our environment. Our environment often has to do with where we're born, our educational opportunities, related to socio-demographic and socio-economic factors. And clearly what we're seeing with COVID as it comes back to, vulnerable populations is that there appears to be there appear to be populations in our country that are more vulnerable, again, not necessarily for developing the virus itself, although they may be, because the way people live and the way people work affect their health. And so population density, as we're seeing in New York City, is affecting rates of COVID. But if you think about it, if you, as opposed to living in a home with various bedrooms, you live in a single apartment with 15 family members, and one of those family members has a viral infection, that infection's gonna spread very rapidly. And there are individuals who are considered essential workers. And a large majority of essential workers are of minority populations. And these are people helping to keep our country going right now, where many of us are not able to work. And these essential workers are often in contact with the general population and frequently not as protected or aware of the means for protection in the setting of an epidemic or viral pandemic. Now, coming back to disparities, I've given invited presentations on every continent except for Antarctica. And if you do know of a heart disease prevention meeting in Antarctica, please let me know, because I do want to get there someday when we're allowed to travel again safely. But I've shown a slide all over the world. And this is a slide of the city that you and I live in, Atlanta, Georgia. And this slide looks at two different sectors of the city: Buckhead, which is north of the city, right on the perimeter, where the average life expectancy is about 83 or 84 years. And then Bankhead, which is southwest of that by 15 miles. And there, the life expectancy is 13 or 14 years less. Now, we're talking about the United States of America, the city you and I live in. And so these disparities are playing out, not just in the setting of COVID-related illness, but they're playing out every single day. And we do know that our zip code, where we live, is a much more potent determinant of health and risk for disease than our genetic code.
Yeah, and that's really profound. And as you mentioned, it's really humbling being physicians and that what we do for our patients is such a small part of health looked at. When you look at the contribution of our environment, the zip code, our access to care, and as well as access to just good food. And, you know, we've mentioned a lot of the things that are increasing our vulnerability, be it the chronic diseases or the socioeconomic factors. But, you know, I'm an optimist and I always like to find, you know, the positive. What are things that individuals can do? You know, how can people feel empowered to, you know, not be so vulnerable? How do you advise your patients?
Sure. So we certainly want to distinguish between approaches to individuals versus approaches to populations. And we need to think very differently in these approaches. Related to individuals, I certainly want to provide the message that each and every one of us can contribute to our own health and better contribute to the health of our family and our friends and our coworkers and our neighbors and our communities. And so each and every one of us can do something to improve health promotion and disease prevention. Now, I think we should be optimists, but also realists. And here, behavioral change is hard. A lot of health promotion and disease prevention has to do with behavioral change. And here, you know, using concepts we call readiness to change, how ready are you to make a change, single concept learning, thinking about a specific area of focus, and make that your beginning starting point. And then many times when you're on the journey, there are different skills needed to behavioral change versus behavioral maintenance. And so here, as a physician, as a cardiologist, as a preventive cardiologist, as you are, Sharon, somebody caring for patients, this is about partnered care, safety and trust, and really working with others to help determine what are the ways you can live the rest of your life in the best way possible, focusing on health and hopefully extending healthy life for as long as possible. Now, coming back to the population approach here, we have to think very, very differently related to population-based approaches, because remember, not each and every one of us has access to healthy foods. There are areas of food insecurity, food deserts, and we've done some research at Emory through our Emory Clinical Cardiovascular Research Institute that shows that if you live in an area of food insecurity, you're at much greater cardiovascular risk. Now, there are neighborhoods where there's not safe walkability. And so a great experiment that's happening before our eyes in the city of Atlanta is the Beltline, right? So as opposed to saying, Mr. Smith or Mrs. Brown, I want you to walk more every day. And by the way, I do really encourage my patients to keep a step count. Walking less than 5,000 steps a day, you're a couch potato. If you walk more than 10,000 steps a day, that's the equivalent of walking 5 miles. You don't need to do that all at once. And there's cumulative benefit. But coming back to the Beltline, an area that was a wasteland in the city, this was a graduate project for a student at Georgia Tech, has become, build it and they will come. And you see people of all sorts out there. They're walking, they're biking, they're skipping. They're with their family and they're out in the environment enjoying moving. And moving doesn't have to be painful. Exercise doesn't mean going to the gym, getting your gym clothes on, getting sweaty. Exercise is moving more and sitting less. So we need to think different differently in terms of population health. This is really where our greatest opportunities lie. When we think about public health and population health, it's making the easy way of being healthier even an unconscious activity. So without thinking about it and being proactive, if you have a healthier environment and we've invested, and that's a key concept, we need to invest more in public health and population health. And I think the COVID pandemic also should make us realize that you know, if we want to be prepared, and I'm gonna be careful about a political statement here, but I mean, our military should be prepared for invasion. But right now, the enemy is invisible. The enemy is around us, and the enemy is still the greatest challenge we've had in the last 100 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, your point about what we can do as a community to promote people's health, you know, by simple things like just creating sidewalks and walkable spaces is really great. I want to, you know, kind of go back to, you know, what we were talking about before, and that you have, you know, so there's so much more work to be done in terms of shifting the focus towards cardiovascular health instead of treating cardiovascular disease. You know, from your long career in this area, how do you define preventive cardiology? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, this is a space that I've been in now for several decades. And at least technically, in order to be and we've had these conversations on a national level, technically, in order to be a preventive cardiologist, you have to be a cardiologist. You have to be a heart doctor. Now, even though we have started one of the first training programs for preventive cardiologists, there is a greater need to serve our population in this country and on a global level to have what I call our cardiovascular preventive specialists, or even cardiometabolic or cardiodiabetic specialists. And these may be clinicians who are not trained as cardiologists, but are trained through other specialties and have adopted these areas of focus and these areas of service as what they've dedicated their careers to. In terms of a preventive cardiologist, though, these are individuals who are on the flip side of many cardiologists. I am a cardiologist. In fact, I spent 15 days in a row on our hospital cardiology teaching service on the front lines. And for 23 consecutive days, I was self-quarantined in my own home. And so I am out of quarantine, which is wonderful, since our youngest son, Daniel, just graduated from Emory. You have the Emory banner behind you there. And so we are an Emory family, and Daniel just graduated. So I was able to enjoy that with the family. The greater need is for cardiovascular preventive specialists, because coming back to the unhealthy population that is at risk right now, there are predictions by the year 2030, so that's 10 years off, that one half of all Americans will be by definition obese, a BMI greater than 30, and one quarter of Americans will be morbidly obese. And so the charge is all of us on the front lines of clinical care need to be humbled, but at the same time, we need to realize that our current model of healthcare delivery in our country needs significant change and improvement. And that improvement is a reconfiguring of how we do things. You know, cardiologists frequently are wonderful at fixing things when they're broken. But do we want to wait until things are broken? Somebody's having a heart attack, a stroke, a valve that's stuck that is compromising their ability to walk without getting short of breath. So we have many devices, many tools, many therapies, but hypertension. hypertension is the number one cause, the medical term would be population attributable risk for morbidity and mortality in our country. And yet by the 2017 hypertension guidelines, one quarter of Americans with high blood pressure have well-controlled blood pressure. I served on our 2018 cholesterol guidelines, and these guidelines really are at least making us recognize that patients at higher risk should be treated with well-known, well-established, well-validated therapies that can prevent heart attacks, strokes, bypasses, and early deaths, like what happened to my grandfather. And so we are today, we have many, many capabilities of preventing heart disease. What we need to do is focus on implementation. I can say this, although again, I'm speaking on my behalf and not behalf of the institutions that I serve, but I've been honored since October of 2019 to be the executive director of a national program called the Million Hearts Initiative. And the Million Hearts Initiative was started in 2012, a very deliberate partnership between the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, focusing on preventing a million heart attacks, strokes, and cardiac events in Americans. And this can be done. We know through keeping people healthy, optimizing care, and focusing on priority populations, heart disease, a significant portion of it, is preventable. And so I've spent the last two decades or more focusing on heart disease prevention. This podcast is the heart of cardiovascular prevention, but there's work to be done today and tomorrow in the future.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And as we're wrapping up, I wanted to ask you, you know, for our listeners, from all the, you know, guideline committees and, you know, I know you've also served as an expert on the U.S. News and World Report as a diet expert for the best diets. Do you have like a top three of like three of the most impactful things people can start doing today that will help, you know, change their own health as well as some of the trends that we're seeing across the country?
Yeah, so this is a great take-home message. So top three is coming back to that a significant portion of heart disease is preventable. And so better understand your risk as an individual, better understand your family's risk, and be proactive and preemptive. Don't just understand your risk, but do something about it. That something can be done as an individual, that something can be done along with your care team, and that something can be done for making the world you live in a healthier world. That's the give back. The second one is that we've already talked about it, that healthcare doesn't equal health. And so I think we are under this guise that if we invest more and more in healthcare, we're going to be healthier. That isn't true. And so we need to invest not only in our own health, but the health of our greater community, because that health comes back to affect our health. So we need to understand that we live in a collaborative world, and we can see that we are very connected when a virus can spread from China across the entire planet in a very short period of time. And so that connectiveness means that we should not only be focused on our health, the health of Atlanta, but the health of what are called low and middle income countries, because the greatest risk in the world are these populations that now are suffering the ravages of chronic diseases that we have suffered through and are continuing to suffer from. But the third message is gonna be that we have low and middle income countries in our own backyard. And so we can talk about emerging economies and emerging countries, But let's just come back to the story I told you about the city you and I live in, Atlanta. And we need to invest in health for all, and each and every one of us can be a part of that.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Sperling, thank you for all the work that you've done. I mean, I think when I think of your career and your contributions and your commitment and your passion, you know, you've been so instrumental in our understanding that heart disease is preventable and what we need to do to make that happen. So I thank you for, you know, the tremendous years of dedication, work, research, clinical care that has helped bring us to where we are today. And like you said, there's more to do. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't had a chance to touch on?
I just want to thank you again for providing me this opportunity to speak with you today, Sharon, to speak with your listeners. And I'm going to challenge your listeners to focus better on their health, heart disease prevention for them. But I also want to challenge your listeners to focus on prevention for others, because we can all make a difference, and we need to make a difference.
You're here. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks again.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.